guest is Ronald Lee Claxton. We have a mutual contact, Eric Gobert, who's been a friend of this show and several others, to include Gordon Comstock's. Eric was the person who first alerted me to John Ackerman's work, which is just truthfully out of this world, without trying to be funny. But Eric has also gotten me in touch with our guest tonight. It's Ronald Lee Claxton, and it goes back to some of Ackerman's work, and it also, ironically, when I mentioned a few, well, I guess 2 months ago or so, that I was intrigued by Ernest Martin's book, written in 1994, in which he divined from astronomy that Christ's birthday was, and he was really particular about it. I mean, he was specific. He said it was September 11th. Very interesting stuff. And after that, I started to hear from Ron. So, Ron, I tell you, why don't you tell me what your research involves, and then backtrack, if you will, as to how you got involved with this, because obviously you read Martin's book as well. Is that correct?
Yes, I read it. I read most of it last December, early January of this year.
All right. So where are we going to go with this? One of the things that intrigued me is that you had sent me an email, and I believe it was a couple of months ago, and in it you talked about a new millennium or a new aeon, and it was not necessarily for the good guys, was it?
No, I don't. Pulling off something like that, pulling off something like 9/11, you know, 2001, I don't think that was. It just seems to be, to me, from what I've noticed and what I've been putting together, it seems to be the genuine beginning of a new millennium, and it was intended to be another unfolding event in the march toward global totalitarianism. That's the recurrent theme on your show, and that's just the way it seems to be to me.
I had said it struck me that and people have fished back in time and found, I guess, other perhaps catastrophic or certainly dynamic events that occurred in past centuries on September 11th. The ones, of course, that were listed by folks who did the research, obviously none of them were actually positive. And we had a guy on, John Valentini. In fact, he never came on, but he did a lot of research in this area, I should say, from Australia. And it intrigued him as well. But I kind of call it, or I guess sum up 9/11 as quite possibly, shall we say, a birthday anti-celebration by the evil ones, and perhaps that's the reason why it occurred that day. We don't know, but boy, that's one coincidence if, in fact, they're not related.
I would say so. I have evidence that because of astrological/astronomical occurrences on September 11, 2001, they correspond with recurrent. There's a recurrent theme I've noticed with Jupiter being in Gemini. There's certain what I consider key dates, and they're big dates, not just minor dates. I would consider them big dates in our history, and it just seems to tie this Jupiter and Gemini phenomenon I've noticed seems to tie together quite a bit of history, and it all points to this unseen conflict we are engaged in, and we. Even if you're not aware of it, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against the rulers of the darkness of this world.
Some folks get a little bit reactionary when I've spoken about this before, and that telling by the signs of the constellations, and of course they hear that, and they're like, well, you know, astrology's not good, blah, blah, blah. But the point was, even at the time of Christ's birth, do you know if the constellations were in place and people refer to them as somewhat we do today?
I can't say if 2,000 years ago, if the meaning we give to certain constellations is exactly the same as they would have. I mean, I have a book by Michael Kidger written in 1999. He's saying that, for instance, the constellation of Aries, the ram, would not have been considered, wouldn't have been related to Jesus like I think it is, at least given the information we have these days, it seems to fit a story that, yes, Leo, not Leo, but Aries could be, would have been considered a constellation associated with Jesus. But he says it's not. He doesn't, Michael Kidger in his book doesn't reference why, but I guess to try to answer your question as succinctly as possible, I can't say that what we would consider, the meanings we would give them today would be the same as they would have given them 2,000 years ago. I also don't know what the professional astrologers make of these constellations. I haven't even been in contact with astrologers. This is just something I've noticed on my own, basically because of having been given a presentation of John Ackerman's work and having read Ernest Martin's book late last year. I pretty quickly began to see, oh, that's quite a bit coming together. Mm-hmm. And then the movie The Patriot and also the movie The Sixth Day just got me thinking there are some intriguing aspects of those movies that both of those movies that just seem to be helping me piece together a story that covers at least the last 2,000 years.
The constellations might have been secondary, too, because also we can't forget about the alignment of the planets. Was the alignment of the planets something, I'm guessing, that people at that time were attuned also to the appearance of certain heavenly bodies, whether they were planets or not, at certain times. I'm assuming at least that they got into a certain, I guess, I want to say routine, but they realized that things were cyclical along with being seasonal. And with the placement of these heavenly bodies, they could tell at least some kind of time or season. I mean, obviously, you know, the season because it gets cold and it gets warm, but still in all, the appearance of the bodies at certain times. And, I mean, Ackerman had said, if I remember correctly, that when you go back to the solar system as it was not like today, mm-hmm. not as nearly, I think we could call it symmetrical, that people knew something was up by the proximity of a planet to Earth. And I think he speaks, and it's been a long time, Ron, so you know I'm rusty on this, but I was talking at a time when there were two Mars. Isn't that correct?
Well, there's what he called priori Mars,
right.
And Mercury is actually the former core of Mars.
That pulled away, is that right?
At the last, he calls them the dance encounters, at the final breakaway of the last dance encounter, which was to be around 700 B.C., Mercury escaped for the last time, and there was some subtle event with Venus that helped kick Mercury and Mars away from each other permanently so far. So, yes, you had mentioned I guess I should quickly try to address what you had mentioned, not just the constellations, but the importance of the planets, the planetary alignment.
Right.
It's interesting. Ernest Martin, he pins, it seems convincing to me, the planet Jupiter as the star of Bethlehem. If you go back to the time of Jesus' birth, Jupiter would have still had a large spewing mass of whatever coming out of it, whatever was ejected from this. He calls it, Ackerman calls it the traveler that came in and impacted on it, similar to Shoemaker-Levy 9 in 1994. This major impact around 4000 BC kicked out so much material from which Venus was born that even as late as the 800s AD, he has here in his book, I'm looking at it right now, there is an Arabic drawing. I can't interpret all this, but he's had it interpreted. And up here in the upper left-hand corner is the planet Jupiter drawn with a huge, massive, spewing gush of something coming out of it. So even as late as, you know, only 1,200 years ago, Jupiter was still spitting out a good bit of material. And so this was, the volume of it would be much, much, much greater than Jupiter itself.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and so
yeah.
The star Bethlehem was not just whatever was all these planetary conjunctions that were occurring around the time of Jesus' birth, and the planets did not visually appear in the sky. They would not have appeared as they appear now. Jupiter just looks like a little bright little dot.
Right.
But it would have had its appearance. I mean, I try to imagine what it would have looked like to these people. It would have had a massive, they would have seen something obvious up there that's more than just that little dot we see
right.
today. And that may be why the planetary conjunctions became so important, not just because there's these little dots of light in the sky that are close together. Wow, isn't that neat? But, I mean, you've got here in the same photograph, even Mercury has something visible. It looks like two little comet tails coming from it. Even Mars has something. I mean, they were still hot at the time, because
right.
this wasn't that long after the final dance encounter event. Does that help explain anything?
Yeah, it does. In fact, I mean, when you were even speaking to this, I have a tendency to think about, in a way, when Hale-Bopp passed by. I remember that's the one body that I can remember in my lifetime that I could actually see stuff trailing off it. Did you get a chance to see that, by the way? Back in around, what was that, 95?
Oh, Hale-Bopp, that was 97. Wasn't that the Heaven's Gate cult incident?
Yeah, that's what it's always associated with. But we got a good look at it down here in Florida, and I'm sure you had, if you were in Georgia, you had a pretty good look at it as well.
I don't remember seeing it. 1997, the life I'm living now or surviving is so much different than it was 14 years ago.
Well, I remember seeing it, and to me, it was going low to the horizon on the north, east to west. And, I mean, clearly you could see stuff was trailing off it, which I thought was astounding. So when you speak about the planets being young enough after a certain event, that material was trailing off them, I mean, I think I got a pretty good picture of what that would look like. Certainly Jupiter would be more visible because of that, I would think, than we have in the present day. But again, when people hear things about Jupiter and all this stuff, and they immediately flee from it because they feel it's astrology in a fortune-telling way, in a way of divination. But that's not, fine that they do that. That's their business. But really, there is something to the alignment of the planets, which can't be overlooked, but I think oftentimes is, because people will look at it as just the, you know, purview of astrology and fortune tellings and all this other horoscopes, and will walk away from it. But I would think that would really fly in the face of the fact that the planetary alignment has impacts on everything, including us. And I've heard some convincing stories also about when children are born in certain alignments, and I don't know that that isn't a very accurate scientific thing.
I think people need to keep in mind that in the book of Genesis, there in the Genesis chapter 1, verse 14, looking at the King James Bible, God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons, for days and for years." There are at least some astronomical bodies, or some of this was intended to be, it seems to be, like a connection.
Right.
A connection to the greater, amazing space around us. I myself don't see the problem, but, you know, maybe 10 years ago, if I put myself in my shoes, then I probably would have been uncomfortable with it. But so much is, after meeting, you know, our mutual acquaintance, he's been pulling the scales off of my eyes?
Uh-huh.
Or helping me pull the scales off of my eyes. And he actually, because of him, he got me started on this.
Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, have you ever talked to John Ackerman?
I've met John Ackerman. I met him in Hilton Head back in early June of this year. And I did more listening. Eric did most of the he's the one who's been going back and forth with him for a few years and actually presents the information. So I just kind of mostly listened. I asked a few of my own questions, but it was nice to actually hear him in person and just see that he's a normal person that likes watermelon and chicken and likes to sit out in the sun and talk with people, and he's not a quackerman as somebody
who
works.
No, I mean, he doesn't fly in the face of Scripture either with what he shared. And I remember that, I mean, I think Randy Morgan's did a show with him as well. But when you work with John, I mean, because this is so foreign to all our experiences and even, you know, academic pursuits, that it takes some kind of baseline, if you will, to understand where he's going, because we all think of the solar system as being as it is today, and it was not. And I remember just vaguely when we were involved with, I guess we did about four or five episodes. He talked about a time when the people would start to realize that a flood was on the way because of the planetary alignments. I think it was Mars at that time would get closest it ever was. And, of course, then that had something to do with the celebration of Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, how pagans want to use it, they can use it. But he was just pointing out the fact that they were actually relying on astronomical, you know, empirical observation, and they applied it to their own lives. I mean, that's just the way it goes. How somebody else wants to use it for whatever purposes does not necessarily vitiate what John was doing, and perhaps what Eric and you have also spent some time investigating. I don't know necessarily where you want to go from here, but I was intrigued when you first wrote me saying that this could have been the beginning of a new millennium, and it was not necessarily, like I said, for the good guys, that this is something. In either your opinion, based on research or straight out from research, could we assume that what you were talking about was a triggering mechanism that's going to usher in a period where, I mean, for those of us who believe in such, that Satan's going to make some kind of concerted effort, and perhaps we're going to be drawing closer to a time that's been written about throughout the Bible?
You'd asked for a thesis at one point earlier.
Yeah.
And I gave you actually a list of CCs from which to work from.
Right.
And the phrase I'd used, it seems to say it so well, it was September 11, 2001, was primarily a ritualized and astrologically based event involving motivations far more spiritually charged than the geopolitical and financial maneuverings of the satanically luminous world. It was a moment of creative destruction from which another major drive for the NWO was to be launched, inaugurating a new millennium here on Earth. And I'm standing by that because I see it as a moment in our linear flow of time in which we were, well, at least I was unknowingly being sucked into what I call surreality, you know, surreal reality.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a life-changing event for those. I only see it now, roughly, this clearly 10 years later, but I do believe it was meant to be the genuine beginning of a new millennium, that period in time in our history.
Well, what struck me as strange was that we had this gigantic New Year's Day celebration, New Year's Eve into New Year's Day celebration going from 1999 going into 2000? And I'm like, well, what's the big deal? Because that isn't the beginning of a new century. You don't begin a century with the zero or the zero date at the end.
Yeah, can you count or not? That's the question.
Well, yeah, I mean, so what happens is 2001 begins a new, in this case, a century and also a new year. And I would have thought that they would have celebrated it in 2001, which would have been the accurate beginning of a new era. And so then you look at 2001 and they go into 9/11 into September, you know, and it doesn't really have to be this way. But I just wondered if there was some kind of calendar that they work off of. I know this sounds kind of foolish, where suddenly, you know, 9/11 of that 01 year becomes the beginning of something. Legitimately in their minds, and I'm saying there, I mean, I'm talking pretty much about the evil that is encroaching about the world as we speak, and I'm sure they were pretty excited at the fact that perhaps they were going to spring and Satan was going to make his move at some time during this particular century.
They made their first, they certainly drew swords back in 2001. Well, would you like me to actually... I mentioned what I'm being introduced to Ackerman's work, to Martin's work.
Right.
Would you like me to actually, I can go a little further in explaining, you know, how I, because it's only within the past really 3 months it wasn't that long before I emailed you in mid-September,
right.
late September, that I actually started putting together this whole Jupiter and Gemini, these Jupiter and Gemini ideas I had.
That
seemed to fit.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. And just to let listeners know, many of them were not around for the John Ackerman interviews. I probably should resurrect them. But also, when we're referring to Ernest Martin's book, you know, I read a chapter from, or part of a chapter from, a couple of months ago, and his book is entitled The Star of Bethlehem, The Star That Astonished the World. And there's a link that's still up in my archives where you can hit that and go to that chapter, but you can also backtrack to the beginning of the book. It is online. So when you hear us talking about Martin's book, that's exactly what it is, and it's in Martin's book where he constructed a date for Christ's birth based on the information in Scripture, and that's when he fixed it. And he actually said, and it could be no other day than September 11th. Very heavy words, but remember, he wrote this in 94, so that's pretty compelling as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, so why don't you do that and tell us the history of this, more or less, with the information that you came upon and what led you to actually are getting together to share what you found.
Okay. I'll briefly review a couple of things. In early 2009 is when I was introduced to John Ackerman's work, and from a trust source, because he had already proven himself to me that he wasn't just trying to steal me, to give me information for me to go out and start, you know, embarrassing myself with, even though if you go out and begin talking this with most people, they're going to laugh at you. But in early 2009, I was introduced to Ackerman's work. Late last year, early this year, I'm reading Martin's book. Oh, this is all interesting. It was about three months ago I decided to rent the Patriot. Not to rent the Patriot, but to just check out the Patriot from our local library here.
You're talking about the movie with Mel Gibson in it.
Oh, yes. As has been pointed out to me recently, the man who has been in so many movies putting forth the revenge theme, that it seems like it's all about Jesuit revenge, you know, so many movies.
Oh, yeah, he portrayed, and I forget, the figure in Scottish history.
Braveheart.
Yeah.
And then The Patriot, and he's got this recent movie. I don't know if he's a hitman or whatever, but, and then he's been in the king of all revenge movies, though, or stories, and that's 1990, Hamlet. He played Hamlet.
Yeah, and also, well, he was in back of that movie about Christ's crucifixion, which was so garish and ghoulish. I have to say that is not to, I think, engender a sympathy for Jesus Christ, but this is what I find in the Jesuitical and Romanist areas where they keep on crucifying him, because if he's continued to be crucified in their eyes, the victory was not won. And I know this might, you know, this might get people upset, but I'll tell you, from being around a Catholic university and a church, I challenge any of you who go to such places to find any kind of depiction of Jesus Christ where he is a healthy, strong male. He's either being cut to death, still on the cross, bleeding everywhere, or he's a baby in his mother's lap. He's never shown as being, shall we say, the kingly side of the Trinity. So I just want to bring that out, because Gibson's movie, I think, was in very bad taste, and deliberately so, considering him and his father's persuasions, if you will. Also, in The Patriot, one of the first things that's said in the movie is when Mel Gibson is weighing the chair that he's just constructed, and he goes, 9/11, perfect.
Yeah. So, yeah, I can give you the exact quote. That's where I was about to go.
I thought, go ahead.
Because that's the reason I checked out the movie from the library. I don't remember exactly when, but it might have been late last year, sometime early this year, possibly. I guess it was at your website, too, at the, not the Visigoth Raw, but the other one, Think of Eden.
I
saw some of those. It was pointed out to me, all the 9/11 foreshadowing in movies, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, John Valentini did that from Australia. He did, like, 99% of the work.
I mean, it even shows up in Gremlins. I mean, come on. So
the Gremlins one is extremely...
It's subtle, but
I mean, it's subtle, but I mean, 9/11, my goodness. Oh, that whole thing with the Sapphire XI, with the make of the radio. But again, what Ronald's referring to is, if you go to Think of Be Eaten and you click on 9/11 photos, You'll see what John collated with some I did and some others that added in also. And in there is the Gremlins thing, which is you can't explain that away, just like with traffic, with all the boxes in the back of the panel truck that are marked 9/11.
Yeah, and the scorpion on it. And...
yeah, thanks. And so this one also was interesting. You could say it's a coincidence, but again, you know, show me any of the dates that pop up in movies like that, and I'll believe in coincidences. So I'm sorry, Ron, but go ahead. Yeah, so you started with the Patriot movie.
Yes, because I wanted to see that opening scene. I had heard about it. I saw the movie years ago, probably around 2000, 2001, not long after it was released. I just wanted to see it because I didn't really remember that thing. I thought, okay, I'll check it out. So I thought, I've got the movie, I watched it. Well, that's great, I've seen it now. And I was going to turn off the movie because that's all I wanted to see. But for some reason, I just kept watching it. And I often think that I'm far disconnected from God because I have issues of my own continually working through. But I just wonder if I'm supposed to be doing this. I never thought of myself as someone who's going to be an occult researcher, but I kind of wonder if I'm supposed to be pursuing this because I decided for some reason to keep watching that movie, and it wasn't too long. Maybe a third way through the movie or halfway through the movie is where the big connection comes in. You got at the beginning, Benjamin Martin. And this is funny, his last name is Martin,
yep.
Ernest Martin, Benjamin Martin. He's the main character. You know, he mentions weighing the rocking chairs. He's made 9 pounds, 11 ounces. That's perfect.
Right.
Perfect.
Perfect,
and
that's
He goes to sit down in it, and it breaks. And he's mad, and he picks it up, or picks the piece of it up, throws it in a pile of other broken rocking chairs. His little daughter's kind of laughing at him. And one of the plantation workers gets a good chuckle out of it. But a little bit later... after his first son, who was named Thomas, was killed, Thomas, and his other son, Gabriel, who's dying later. But, you know, he gets to the point where he goes to negotiate for some prisoners that the British had taken. They'd taken some of his men, and he wants to get them back. So he hatches this bold plan. He's going to go get them back by bluffing his way through a... and he's telling him, look, we've got some of your men, you know. If you don't give us our men, your, what is it, 19 of your officers are going to have to die. I think it's 19. And none of that's true. They just got men, scarecrows, you know, stuffed scarecrow type people tied up against poles. But when he gets to the temporary fort where Cornwallis is stationed at that point, he's sitting in a rocking chair when Cornwallis comes in to meet him. He's got a link between that first scene and this scene. He's got the rocking chair. Well, Cornwallis comes in, and before he even acknowledges Martin, he just says, Jupiter, Mars, come, boys, come. And those are the two dogs that...
Right, that's right, that's
those
right.
Those are the two dogs that they had jacked from... they had looted, you know, from Cornwallis' personal belongings. He got his journals, and he got his dog. Well, Jupiter, Mars, I immediately knew that this has got to be significant because I had already known from earlier this year, I did my own investigating with Starry Night from astronomy software. I already knew that Jupiter was in Gemini on the morning of September 11, 2001. And I found that interesting because I know that you accept Martin's work and you accept Ackham's work, and Jupiter can be considered in a certain context to represent God, Jesus. And... to Jupiter being the star of Bethlehem, Jupiter being so fundamental to the beginning of our, to the last 6,000 years of our solar system. Well, Cornwallis says, Jupiter, Mars, come, boys, come. I immediately knew that was important. I paused the movie. Luckily, the computer here with the Starry Night software was open. I pulled it up, looked it up, you know, put in September 11, 2001, and I was looking for Mars. I knew where Jupiter was, so... I positioned Jupiter. I mean, I clicked on Find Jupiter. I already knew it was in Gemini. Find Mars. Mars is in Sagittarius. And I thought, Sagittarius, what does that mean? And I got to thinking, well, constellation Sagittarius, at least these days, it is Sagittarius, it's an archer. It's a centaur. You don't mess with a centaur. They're archers in combat. So I thought, well, combat, Jupiter in Gemini, Mars in Sagittarius, combat, And then it just kind of struck me that, man, this is, here we are. force, the reality, the real reality, attacking Jesus, trying to bring down Jesus on September 11, 2001. That's just, I can't see any other way.
You refer to, the Starry...
Starry Night.
Starry Night software?
Yes, it's...
Can you tell us about that, please?
It seems to be probably the best-selling astronomy software. What you can do with it is go back over the last 2,000 years and examine the sky. You can't go back too far because the further you go back, you know, Ackerman mentions it may have been around only a few hundred years after the last encounter, so that would be around 400 BC. You can only accurately go back and have the software position the planets as they would have been only back to about 400, maybe 400 or 500 BC, possibly even earlier. But I would think that 2,000 BC is definitely safe. I mean, not 2,000 BC, but you know, 2,000 years ago at the year from 1 BC to 1 AD, only 2,000 years ago should be safe. Starry Night will calculate based on the accepted physical laws that NASA uses, that astronomers use, and will calculate positions of planets, of the moon, of our sun. You can even do some type of work with stars way outside our solar system, 700 light years away. That eats the velocity of your computer, though. But you can do what I've been doing, and just, you know, you can either have a good time keeping up. That's interesting. Jupiter is going to be high in the sky on such and such a night. Get out the telescope, or you can do what I've been doing and try to piece together historical events with what seem to be their related astrological underpinnings.
All right, now, excuse my ignorance, which is massive, but when Jupiter and Mars are in a certain configuration, which I think you're saying oftentimes bespeaks some kind of event or events, is it always, does it always happen like that in September, or does that they also align themselves in a similar, if not exact same position at other times, given how, you know, with the revolutions of the planets and such, do they configure themselves in other months as they had in 2001, or is it just simply, is it just that happens in September and you can pretty much depend on it for obvious reasons?
Jupiter has a roughly 12-year cycle. I've looked up the accepted number right now. It's about 11.85 years around our sun. So roughly every 12 years, Jupiter is going to be positioned.
As it was then?
If it's in Gemini in 2001, as it was late 2001, then only 12 years before, in late 1989, Jupiter is going to be in Gemini. I haven't looked up Mars. Mars moves faster through the sky.
Right.
Because it's closer to our sun, its motion through apparent motion through our sky is a good bit quicker than Jupiter, but it's, I need to be specific. I've noticed certain ill-intentioned historical events seem to be occurring when Jupiter's in Gemini, not necessarily when Mars is also in Sagittarius. It's just that when Jupiter is Gemini is the main theme, but there are two, what I think are two important dates, I would say, based on Martin's book, early 3 BC, is the birth of John the Baptist. And at that time, Jupiter was in Gemini. Early March, 3 BC, Jupiter was in Gemini. Mars was in Sagittarius. Jesus is referred to as the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. And here on 2001, September 11, 2001, you're back at Jupiter in Gemini, Mars in Sagittarius. This Jupiter in Gemini phenomenon, I've also, I think AD 33 is a good day for the 33 AD, I think, is a good date for the crucifixion of Jesus Christ, and again, Jupiter in Gemini. But not only Jupiter in Gemini, but Mars in Gemini, or right there at Gemini with it. There's this Mars-Jupiter antagonism I've noticed. It's not necessarily Jupiter in Gemini and Mars in Sagittarius. I don't know exactly how often they are paired,
right,
you know, with one being in Gemini and one being in Sagittarius. I haven't gotten that far. I really haven't been doing this that long. I'm surprised I've put together a good bit of information the past couple of months, which is surprising to me because I would like to do a lot more, but silly is not the word, but this busy work job I have, just, you know, it seems its purpose is just to make sure I don't do much of anything productive with my mind that I was given.
Well, this may not be a fair question to ask you, but, I mean, I have my own opinion about it, and I think I've heard some others. But one wonders what it is that these things take place when these planets align a certain way. Am I to understand that one of the possibilities could be, I mean, everything is foretold, so whatever happened, obviously, with Jesus had to happen. There was no two ways about it. He was quite aware of that as well. But what I'm wondering about is that not only this planet, but I would almost assume this universe is under the rule of Satan until an appointed time. And if that is the case, and I want you to tell me, I mean, is it your belief that perhaps he orchestrates these events because he is the power here, again, for a time, and that he uses that as time markers as to when certain things should take place? Now, that may be a really, you know, elementary expiation of this, and I apologize, but I'm wondering if you believe, and it may only be your opinion or perhaps you know or whatever, why this happens at these points. Is this Satan orchestrating it and using the celestial world more or less as, like I said, time markers?
I'm of the opinion that both Satan and the people who do Satan's will know far more about the actual, what we would call scientific laws. They know more of these. They know more about these planets than they tell us. The significance of them is, I now view everything as having all these historical events. They have a spiritual significance. We see the world as we see it, but most of us seem to be blind to the actual reality that underlies what we think is reality.
Well,
I'm of the opinion that they know, Satan knows, and his minions know the true significance of these planets, of Jupiter. I believe they know the history of what Ackerman's been uncovering. And what exactly it means is, you know, I can't put my finger on it. I know we are subject to the authority that Satan has right now. I don't know these reasons why. I read through the Bible, and I often don't understand, you know, why is this? It's not that I'm not trying to say I don't understand what I'm reading, but, you know, you have these questions that I can't imagine anyone reading through the Bible or trying to talk with God, communicate with God, and not have serious questions about why is this way? Why is it that way? We are subject to the authority of Satan, and keep in mind that, I'm sure you pointed this out, though, actually I know you have, that Jesus is being tempted by Satan, and Satan offers him, you know, taking up to, I guess you would have to say, up into orbit. Look at all this, it's all mine. I don't have the exact quote from Luke, but look at it, it's all mine, and I'll give all this to you if you'll just worship me. And Jesus just rebuked him for, I'm not going to worship you because you're not God, you worship God only. But Jesus did not correct the implicit message of that, which is it's all mine. Well, no, he did not. That's not implicit. He actually...
It was explicit.
Yeah, he was explicitly said, look, it's all mine.
It was a boast, yes.
I'll give it to you if, you know, you will worship me. But that statement was not corrected. And we are subject to an authority that is not malevolent. It's not benevolent. It is actually about as malevolent as I guess you could be.
Yeah, I would say that's a quintessential malevolence.
I don't know what was it that caused that. It has to go back to Adam and Eve. They were tempted, but they chose poorly. Jesus was tempted. Jesus passed the test. If you would consider that a test, Jesus, I don't know what to say other than pass the test. Adam and Eve, I'm not trying to impugn them. I don't want to sound disrespectful. It's just,
but they didn't.
they did something that subjected us to serious consequence. not because God hates us, not because because this world, because this universe has been constructed has been orchestrated to destroy us, but because we as humans, we choose poorly. So we subject ourselves to the spiritual nature of this universe. And if I said that, does that answer?
Well, yeah.
Hopefully.
No. Yeah. I mean,
I feel like I'm rambling at times. I don't know exactly what to say.
Well, no, you're doing fine with rambling. I mean, you're talking to a major rambler yourself. So
okay. All right.
So that's not a problem whatsoever, because I mean these things are very weighty. I mean, and I'm thinking this out as we're going along, because I find it sometimes I hate to use the word. Fascinating. It's hard for me to come out of my mouth like that because of what it all entails. But it is fascinating. I mean, it's the greatest story ever told about the battle of good and evil. So yes, while it is fascinating, it's also of great concern. But you know, one of the things also that I come across because of the work I do and have done in the past with The Informer, and more recently with James Montgomery. And that is, I see a lot of people who want to declare themselves sovereign citizens and non-resident aliens, and we can be free. And I'm thinking, no, you can't. I mean, because of original sin, we won't go through all that stuff. First of all, you're in slavery to your flesh, not only from temptation, but because it ages and it's going to die. And there's a time when we will not be chained to a decaying husk. Secondly, you're on this earth, and Satan runs the show until a certain time. So the slavery of one walking this earth is only for a short time, and it's a test, if you will. But we're going to be free from this, truly be free. So, you know, Paul Sand, who's been on, I don't know if you're aware of Paul.
Yes, I'm aware. I know.
You know, and we talk about that, too. It's like, look, they can kill the body, but they can't, you know, don't let them kill the spirit. And that's exactly where it is, because that lives on forever. God does not destroy spirit. Bodies may fall apart and all that, but good or evil, spirits will live on, and that's what heaven and hell is for. So when I say about the orchestration of events attuned to the creation, it's also made very clear in Scripture that there will be those who worship the creation rather than the Creator. And I think that's where we're at with paganism, especially extremely evil paganism. There's some that just kind of consider themselves druids, I guess, and, you know, live their life by whatever they see. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to go down that road, but, you know, it's just that I can understand that because they do worship the creation, the celestial alignments and such, where we live by faith and in the grace of Jesus Christ and his death and resurrection. So if they want to play that game, and apparently they do, then I can understand why these times and these alignments mean so very much to them, because that pretty much is the pinnacle of their belief system. And then I would ask you this question. If you've now, I understand you've stated you've been in this for about 3 months or so, and apparently you've been very active about it and very avid about it.
I've been thinking about it over the last year, but I've really only been, you know, writing about it and emailing you about it over the last 2.5 to 3 months.
And this is probably a question that I should not ask, but I'm going to.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that's because I tell people don't try to time things. They do that with the calendar. Ever since 9/11, it's like, well, it's 11/11/11. Relax. But do you know when there's a time when that situation will occur again? Are we going to see this in about, what, 23?
Jupiter and Gemini?
What the situation... in the skies, as it was on 9/11/01.
Well, being a roughly 12-year circuit around our sun, Jupiter will be back in Gemini in about the last half of 2013. I don't know about Mars.
You know, I'm sorry, I'm jumping 20 years. This is the reason why I failed geometry, algebra, and math. I'm thinking 20 years ahead, but right, that's right. 13 would be it. I'm sorry, that would be the next alignment, right? And I'm thinking another 20 years ahead of time. I'm so good like that.
Consider this. If you subtract 12 years from 2001, you get 1989. And you go back to 1987, and you have good old Reagan was he at the Berlin Wall when he said,
tear down?
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. Well, 2 years later, you had that big, the big show of the famous TV images of, you know, people chipping away at the Berlin Wall with the sledgehammers, whatever. Jupiter and Gemini that year. You go down to, you go back to late World War II, not World War II, late World War I, 1917, 1918. Was the October Revolution in 1917?
I'm just going to go say, yeah.
I looked it up earlier today. It was the next year, the, you know, right around that time, 1918 was a Jupiter and Gemini year. You go forward to 1931, and I've heard you say that the Empire State Building was, do you christen a building? You have the grand opening or the ribbon cutting ceremony?
Oh, well, yeah, you have the groundbreaking, and then later on you have the, you know, the whole cornerstone thing going on.
May 1st, 1931, if I remember right, I looked that up. Unfortunately, it's not a perfect 12 years, so you can't just subtract 12 years on and on. Eventually, you're going to be off about every, looks like about every six cycles, you're going to be off a year.
But doesn't that also do with the imprecision of the calendar that we now observe?
Well, yes. I mean, well, there could also be, as part of it, there could also be small, there are small inaccuracies in the software because we're human and we don't know this, we don't know the clockwork regularity of the solar system as does God, so we have, there are small errors in here, and yes, our calendar system is possibly, or not possibly, it does have small errors. I don't know the whole story of the calendar, but our current, what is it called, the Gregorian calendar, will have errors as well.
Right.
But you're mentioning, just on the subject of Jupiter and Gemini date, the years in which Jupiter is in Gemini, 2001, that's as consequential an event in our lives as I can think of. Spiritually, physically, it was just, it was a moment of creative destruction. I can put forth some more movie evidence if you want me to in a minute, but I just figured I should mention this too. You know, September 11, 2001, Jupiter and Gemini. Go back to what I think is the birth of, the time around the birth of John the Baptist, Jupiter and Gemini, early 3 BC. 33 A.D., what I have good evidence was the date of the crucifixion, April of 33 A.D., Jupiter and Gemini. Now, we tied together Ackerman and Martin, but you can get the Informer in Montgomery, who you recently had. I heard your live show from a couple weekends ago.
Right.
They're involved in this, too, in the sense that July 4th, 1776, Jupiter and Gemini. You move forward to 1812, and I don't know what the British were. I don't know all these details as well as you guys, but I do know that because Jupiter was in Gemini. I mean, does that sound crazy? That there's this guy on the talking with you saying because Jupiter was in Gemini, that means the Informer and Montgomery aren't crazy. 1812, Jupiter was in Gemini.
Well, you know, one of the things that Harry, who was my former partner and the originator of this show, we talked about stuff. And, you know, he one day just kicking things around, he said to me, you know, if you really want to think about a new world order, he said, the way that it's designed to be, and that is a global governance. He said, think about it. He said, wasn't really the federalization of the 13 new states a sort of new world order? It was a confederation. And he said, could it not have been a dry run of sorts, or if we're just talking like we are, Ron, kind of like a wink and a nod for what this country is headed for. And then you think about the fact, and you've heard us state this, and I won't go through it the whole nine yards, but you have only 13 colonies, 13. And then you take the 14th territory, you don't make it a state, it's a district of mm-hmm. Columbia. And Columbia is a manifestation of the goddess of heaven, which is right from the pit of hell. And then in D.C. you place the obelisk, which is representative in Egyptian sun god worship of the lost piece of Osiris, which was his penis that Isis went looking for. So here you have 13 states, and then you take the missing piece of Osiris, who was chopped up, and he placed the obelisk in the District of Columbia in sight of the female representation which is the dome of the Capitol, on top of which they placed in 18, I guess it was 70, I think 6. I may have that wrong, but when they topped the Capitol, they did it with the Goddess of Liberty. And she's still standing up to this day, though they don't call it that. They call it something else. So obviously the original intent has been forgotten. So you have all this occult numerology and symbology taking place in this country. Even more ironic, because they sold it as the place where, you know, Christians would be safe and God loved this because it was Christians that were our leaders. Baloney. So my point is, there you have what happened here as a kind of a celebration of what has been and what is yet to come. And then you say that on July 4th, 1776, bang, guess what happened that day? And how the stars were, I mean, how the planets were aligned. Doesn't that seem fortuitous for those who serve the evil side?
Gratuitous, yeah. Gratuitous and planned because, well, keep in mind, though, that it's not just on July 4th, 1776. It's not just on one day, but Jupiter spends roughly 1 year out of every 12 years in a certain constellation. So there's a period of time around July 4th, you know, so you got the big occult holidays in May? So May 1776, who knows what was going on then? And then there's a period of time around that July 4th where Jupiter's in Gemini, and it seems to be spiritually significant. 11 days after July 4th, on July 15th, I've noticed what I'm trying to confirm it. I need some help, but I'm trying to confirm whether or not this is a solar eclipse.
Huh.
I've noticed what could be a solar eclipse, and it just struck me because it's 11 days later, and I thought, well,
you're going
to do this
right
on July 4th. Why do you got to do it on July 4th? Is it because something astrologically significant happened 11 days later, and, you know, the number 11 is, for whatever reason, is I think I have some tidbits about the number 11, maybe if you want to hear them later, but I thought I should mention that you mentioned the the Washington Monument. I think I can go at least add to that, maybe not one-up you, but have you ever seen an overhead photo looking down on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue? Have you ever seen a satellite photo that shows the surrounding streets? And you do have, though it is incomplete on one side, you do have a pyramid, one of the vertices converging right into the White House. Not a pyramid, a pentagram, and one of the vertices converges right in to the White House.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that?
I've seen renderings of it, but, I mean, I'm not taking a look. I assume I could go to Google Earth and take a look at that, right?
Yep.
I look down.
That's,
sure,
that's what I've used. I heard about that from a series by, narrated by Christian J. Pinto.
Chris Pinto, yep. Mm-hmm.
Rosenstone, The Secret Architecture of Washington, D.C., and that's one of the, there's actually a three-part series. The first one's called The New Atlantis. The second one is the Rosenstone, the Architecture of Washington, D.C., and the third one is about all the satanic mess on our satanic reserve note we used. 3 years ago is when I saw that, and because of that, that's actually before I met Eric, but briefly, right before I met Eric, but right around that time is when so many of my precious held beliefs about being an American, about being what I thought was a Christian, about life on this planet, so many of my long-held beliefs were beginning to be overturned 3 years ago.
Just to encapsulate what I've come to as far as a realization as a Christian, and that is the connection that was created actually in our history textbooks, not in the Bible, about this favored status that the United States got because Christians came over here, blah, 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 and supposedly the framers were all Christian, which is bogus. I mean, everybody's a Christian. I mean, who isn't a Christian? Have you ever seen a politician who's not Christian?
Yeah, it's not even a, it doesn't seem to be a respectful term anymore.
No, it isn't. I mean, it's all show. But the thing is, we were sold that, not in the Bible, but in secular textbooks and movies and entertainment. And so Christians have hung on to that more so than anyone else has. And it is the absolute opposite. And if, you know, it just stands out in front of you. And when you talk about things like, why did you put on this this dollar bill, this filthy lucre, so many manifestations of occult symbology. And I'm not even banging the Masons to that. I mean, this goes back before they ever were around. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, why do we have that? You could have done anything in the world on your paper currency, and you chose to do this. I mean, come on.
You're talking about more than just the owl.
Oh yeah, more than just the owl. But I mean, even putting that that it was so small, it's like a jot, and they put it in there. Why in the world did you do that? With the representation that the owl has, I mean, it's crazy. So much so that people get astonished. But it's like, look, folks, it's there. It was put there deliberately. Now, should that give you some pause to question? Yeah, but they don't. So anyway, they want to run with this thing about God loves the United States. We can do anything we want to because we're really in his furry pocket. Not really. And, of course, then you have to explain, you know, of course, two genocides on the native peoples before and after the Civil War. How does that work out with what God wanted for humanity? So, yeah, I mean, we've been all through this. But that is the exquisite irony that's right out in the open. And most people will turn their back on it because they want to believe the myth that they were brought up with. I mean, listen, folks, you got rid of Santa Claus. You got over that. Well, maybe you ought to try something really mature and understand that this place is not favored by the Lord for any other reason. I mean, I don't want to go any further into it. But the thing is, you know, I don't see him looking at nations as if he has he sees the boundaries. No. I mean, he looks at hearts, every single individual. And to think that some nation is given favored status is absolutely a fairy tale. So
I've tried to, you know, I'm only now beginning to arm myself and have the information at hand to actually discuss the history of this country intelligently with people like, well, there are a few people I've discussed it with, for instance, my mom and dad. I try to discuss some of this with them, but I have to be careful because when it comes to the U.S., I don't want to seem like a U.S. basher to them because, you know, I'm not armed with everything I need to know just yet. And even if I was, I don't know if I could, I just don't know if I could convince them.
Get through to them? Yeah, I know.
Because, and I don't want to sound disrespectful to my parents, it's just they're part of the greatest generation. They're part of Tom Brokaw's generation, right? It's still ingrained into them, I guess, more than me. Maybe, I don't know why it is that I'm able to deal, well, I find it difficult to deal with a lot of this because, you know, as I've been finding out, so much of this life, the whole world is a lie. I've heard Gordon Comstock say that. Yes, the whole world is a lie. That's the way it seems to me. I can't see it any other way now.
Well, you know, understand something, too, and that is growing up, I, for whatever reason, you know, I heard World War II veterans talking. I heard Korean veterans talking as a child. And then later, I watched Vietnam and other guys coming back. If you want a flag wave, you can do that. But I've seen plenty of veterans who knew exactly what the deal was about these wars. And, you know, we're not going to go by the John Wayne stuff. And when Johnny comes marching home, they knew exactly where it was at. So, I mean, people have to want to hang on to the myth for whatever it means to them. And I'll tell you what, yeah, if you prove your case, the more so you do it, you can tell right away whether you're going to get some kind of acceptance or whether you're going to just get absolute opposite reactions to the point where it's like the more you prove your point, the more anger and frustration and basically hatred you'll receive because, you know, you're obviously deconstructing something they need to hold on to. The fact that, and I'm not talking about your parents, but I mean anybody in a situation who wants to hang on to that, it's like, well, it's kind of sad you need to hang on to that. I mean, if that's really the construct which, you know, governs your life, I mean, that's pretty poor. And the other thing is also, again, the whole world is about mercantilism and markets. It's got nothing to do with freedom. And, you know, that's something that we've talked about with I-Man also, you know, in Montgomery. And that goes right back to Satan. I mean, who's the one that set up the commercial enterprises? Who's the one that set up banking? I mean, we all understand these institutions, and we're not saying that bankers are, you know, down the block and necessarily corrupt, but it's institutionalized ascriptural behavior. I mean, and we've inculcated it into our lives, and it's obviously a very important part, and now you see what's happened as a result of that with this ongoing financial situation, which is far from over. But, I mean, You know, that's it. If you can't take it, I guess you can't take it. I don't know what the problem is. I just want to know what it is.
I am now mature enough, I guess I'm strong enough emotionally, spiritually, that I can take it. I want to know every lie there is. I want to know the truth. It doesn't matter how painful or upsetting it is. I just have to deal with it because people say I'm sick of, I don't want you to lie to me, this and that, but if you start presenting the truth, this is a crazy reaction that okay, they know it's true, but then are they going to be brave enough? Are they going to be courageous enough, man enough, woman enough to accept it? I was given a small quote from Dresden James. I was given this and told I should use it because it's so pertinent to the discussion. When a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous and its speaker a raving lunatic. You, me, the informer Montgomery, John Ackerman. Certainly John Ackerman. If they try to, I guess you shouldn't try to go out and convince people. You should just be, if someone asks you, you should be honest and tell them the uncomforting, honest truth.
Well,
and my mom has actually been willing to listen to me. I've told her a good bit about Ackerman's work, Martin's work, especially Martin's work. I've tried to get into some of the, what I'm comfortable with what I seem to know fairly well about the lies we've been told about the wonders of this country. Not America. I want to be clear that certainly, like if my mom hears this, she might have heard this. I want to be clear that I don't hate America. America is the informer's been clear about the distinction, right? America is not the United States of America. There is a distinction. America is a part of the continent. It's land.
Right.
But the United States of America is a corporation.
That's
and
right.
If people try to give you some crap about that, then you should point it back to 1988, Michael Douglas, the movie Wall Street. I mean, you're just blatantly told that Gordon Gekko is saying greed is good, greed is right, greed works. And greed, mark my words, will not only say whatever that corporation is, Telstar or whatever, but it will also say that malfunctioning corporation known as the United States of America. And you were being told in a movie back then that this is a corporation. Is that? I just find that wonderful.
I know
that they do this for us. That there's this perverted need to let us know what they're going to do. It goes back to the Patriot foreshadowing. I mean, do you want to? Is this fine to keep going this direction now?
Yeah, I was going to say if we're over an hour now, if you want to bring it to some kind of get to a point where it's a good point to end it, let's by all means do so. But I also want to make mention too that here's the point. I mean, I was born here on this plantation. I didn't have it bad. A lot of people had it good. A lot of them didn't. But it was still a more reasonable place, if you will, for a certain reason. I think what we were fatted for is going to come into view very shortly, and it's going to be our sacrifice this time as the Fourth Reich. So, I mean, I don't get passionate about the flag. I don't get passionate about all this stuff. It's like, look, I was brought up in this plantation. I'm an employee of it. I've given them their due, and that's where it's at. I'm not interested in going anywhere else. But, to say this is the greatest place in the world and blah, I mean, just give me a break, will you? So, it's no disrespect, but the thing is, we all pay our pound of flesh they get from us, and we've had it better than others. But that doesn't mean it's going to end in that same manner. So, I mean, am I anti-American? No, I'm just not pro-anything.
Yeah.
I hate to say it, but, I think the Jehovah's Witnesses had it right. We shouldn't be even taking a Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, what does it say in Scripture? Take no oath. I'm sorry. I'm not pledging myself to the state. Get out of here. And the guy who wrote it was a flaming socialist, too.
Yeah.
And a supposed Christian preacher. Yeah, all right. Anyway.
To a flag, I mean.
No, I'm not pledging myself to the state.
Idolatry. I had a professor, chemistry teacher. He got actually, before I even knew about, before 2008 when I really, my head was spinning because of what I was being confronted with, I had a professor. He said, he can't, as someone who professes Jesus Christ as his Savior and Jesus Christ as God, he cannot see himself pledging allegiance to the flag. I mean, that was a bit of an eye-opener for me. I thought, I need to think about things like this. And perhaps what I should do is try to express to people. I've been trying to do it. I don't know if I'm doing it well, so I just feel like I need to tell people that September 11, 2001 was a time which initiated a series of upcoming events that we're going to have to decide whether or not we're going to try to deal with this on our own, or if we're going to humble ourselves and do what we can to connect with God, because we're going to need more than our guns. We're going to need more than our limited human understanding and our our feeble skills and creativity to deal with the hell that's going to be unleashed on us. I don't know what to say.
No.
The movies from the late 2000s, not the late 2000s, the late 1990s, they, as I think about it now, maybe it's because I'm only now really willing to listen, to put forth the effort to learn something that's important. You've got the movie, I know Paul Sandu has talked about this. I haven't actually heard the discussions he's had about it, but I know he has discussed The Matrix. I mean, I was told that the name Neo Anderson, or Thomas Anderson, I was told that his nickname Neo, being Neo Anderson, means new son of man. Neo, new, Ander, son is in the word Anderson, and Ander is a Central European, it comes from a Central European word that means man, so Neo Anderson being the new son of man, and it's what, in the third movie where there's this scene, I haven't even seen the movie, but I've seen a little snippet where he's, it's like a crucifixion. Neo sacrifices himself. His arms are spread out. He's in a crucified position. And then I guess it's the voice of the architect, the leader of the computer, or the machine. I may have that wrong, but there's this voice that says, it is done. I mean, you have this sacrilegious, this blasphemous bit at Jesus, or Jesus' sacrifice, in that movie. You've got Mel Gibson in the movie The Patriot. Okay. Gibson. The word son's there. What does Gib mean? Because this really gets me. Listen to this. You move on to the sixth day. And I think there is something to not just September 11, 2001, but I think there's also something to September 17, 2001, which is a Monday, 6 days later. It's the sixth day in my mind, because that's the first day Wall Street reopened. It makes me wonder, because of the movie The Sixth Day with Arnold Schwarzenegger, because of the content of the movie, which is cloning people, it makes me wonder if The Sixth Day is you know, fundamentally related to what went down on September 11, 2001. So was September 11th the obvious patent 9/11, while Monday, September 17th was the occult latent?
Yeah.
Did they have the visual 9/11 for us, but then they had their own private 9/11 6 days later? I mean, the content of the movie is Arnold Schwarzenegger in The Sixth Day. You've got his character's name is Adam. Adam Gibson. So here you've got another Gibson. I if someone knows, please, hopefully someone will email it to you. What is the derivation, what's the origination of the word Gibson, what it means, where it comes from? Because Mel Gibson, Adam Gibson. And Adam, at the beginning of the movie, it references the first chapter of Genesis. Verse 27. So God created man in his own image. It has a Bible verse there. God created man in his own image, and the image of God created he him, man with female. And then it goes on, the evening and the morning were the sixth day. What else do you have in that movie? Well, you have some obvious 9/11 foreshadowing. Arnold at the beginning, Adam's looking into a mirror and he asks his wife, do I look older? And then it's one of those futuristic interactive mirrors where it has his schedule, his planned schedule for the day. At 9 o'clock he has an appointment. At 11 o'clock he has an appointment. So you've got this obvious 9/11 reference, and then you have I think the whole movie itself is just a subtle six days after 9/11, a subtle reference to that. You have the content of the movie is cloning people. So Jesus being, where is it in the Bible? I'm not as familiar with many of the verses. I should be. Jesus is the second Adam. You had Adam, but Jesus is the second Adam. Well, here you have what seems to me in this movie, The Sixth Day, you have Adam Gibson. He is cloned, and it's stated later in the movie that one of the problems, one of the legal problems with the clone is they have no rights. They can't own property. And Drucker, who is the bad guy in the movie, he owns the company called Replacement Technologies, and he's worried about his secret being discovered because at that point in the movie, he is himself a clone. He was killed previously, and he's a clone, and he's worried if this gets out that he's going to lose his company, his money. He's going to be killed himself because clones are, they can't own anything. They inherently are inferior. They're not God-breathed people. Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. But that the clones are not God-breathed. They're humans making, humans creating humans, if humans can create humans, humans making humans, counterfeit humans.
Right.
And so it makes me wonder, what are they trying to say? If having 6 days before on September 11th, Jupiter being in Gemini, Jupiter representing, because of Martin's work, because of Ackham's work, representing Jesus or God, if you take down the second Adam on September 11th, and 6 days later, when Wall Street reopens, when this system of commerce kicks off again, what are they trying to institute at that point? What are they trying to raise up? Or what are they giving birth to on that sixth day? So it was September 11th, a moment of conception, while 6 days later, the 17th, was a moment of birth. What were they giving birth to? These are just questions I have. I don't really have a lot of details to pin it down. It's just, these are questions I can't get away from. This is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with people who aren't rational. The world is not rational. It's not logical. We're dealing with people who I think I'm afraid to say I believe the satanic elite of this world are more, they're spiritually connected to a greater extent to their God than we are to Jesus Christ.
It's often been said that those who serve the dark side are much more enthusiastic, assiduous, dedicated, and that is the truth. That is certainly the truth. I think we look at ourselves as being a little bit laid back, perhaps, and we won't get that whole thing about whether or not, well, you know, I'm saved by grace, and whatever happens, it's not a big deal. You know, forget that. But you were saying before, you know, what might be perceived as irrationality is rationale on their own plane. I mean, they're not dealing on the same surface we are. So what they do is, I would say, in their own schema, is extremely rational. That would not appear necessarily to those on the outside. But, you know, think of something also. And again, presidents are put in there to execute a certain part of a greater blueprint. They do not make decisions. They do not do anything on their own volition. If they try to, they get killed. And so you can tell what's going to happen, I think, in the next 4 years by what administration is placed in there. And I'm only going to say my guess is that Obama and the Democratic regime will be allowed to go back in there. And then if you take a look at what's taking place after that, I mean, people can, and remember something also, Ron, people are going to start freaking out about the 2012 thing. So we're going to see that, you know, another couple of weeks, and it's going to last and probably grow to some kind of intensity into a year from now. But to me, that's just booga-booga stuff. I mean, forget about it. But, you know, when we talk about the 12-year cycle and such,
coming up again in 2013, Jupiter and Gemini.
That's what it's, you know, and what I had been writing to some people is like, to me, you can tell what's going to happen. I don't believe that the global economic situation has been allowed to go that way because people didn't know what they were doing. I believe it's deliberate. I think that the system would be crashed as one of the first and major movements to a global system, and that would be economic at this time, probably currency, whatever. That may take place, especially if a Democrat is put back into the office. because what we're going to see is a rehash of FDR's New Deal, which had to do with him coming in on the heels of not necessarily the stock market crash, but the depression that began in 32, over which he presided. And then, you know, and I don't get deep into numerology, but, you know, like I've said, you had a financial panic in 1909. You had us getting into World War One around 1918. So what is that? That's like 9 years.
The U.S. got involved. So it started in 1914.
Our involvement was late.
Late in the okay.
Extremely late. And it was kind of like with us coming over there, they were finally able to push the Germans back. As you would see again in like 44 and 45. Now, again, you take the 1909 panic, you take our involvement in World War One in 1918, then you take a look at the crash in 29, but take a look at the Depression, which really began in 32. 9 years is 41. We're in war at the end of the year, December 7th. Now you take a look and say, okay, did we have the big financial thing? Did that take place in 08? I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. That might be coming later, but then 9 years after that, are we going to find ourselves in the final war, World War III? I tend to think so. But again, you know, I'm not stuck fast in numerology, but there may be more there than I even considered. But there seems to be a rerun of the same script from World War I to II that involved Democratic presidents presiding over financial problems in the situation with Wilson that he came in after, but he supposedly sat over the creation of the Federal Reserve and implementation of a permanent income tax. So without going through all that stuff, we have things happening. So 2013, and I'm assuming Obama's going to be placed back in there. So we're going to see some interesting things in the next 4 years. Do I believe there's going to be some kind of like geological or astronomical, you know, we're going to hit with a meteor or go through, you know, tremendous upheavals beneath the surface? I don't necessarily think so. I don't believe in that Mayan crap at all.
Yeah, I think the 2012 madness has been a setup. Maybe setup's not the right word. It's just whatever the
it's a Mayan distraction. And, yeah.
Whatever the Mayan prophecies are, I haven't kept up with that. I just know that. I do know this. The movie Kingdom of Heaven. I've looked at it myself. I heard that Orlando Bloom had 2012 written on his forehead in a scene in the movie. I checked out the movie from the library. I watched it. It is there. Ridley Scott is not just he's not a lightweight in Hollywood. He's a major director. Gladiator, Alien, 1979, big time movies. Blade Runner 82. I've read that he's a stickler for detail. So this 2012, I watched the movie, saw it. It didn't just end up on Orlando Bloom's head for nothing. So given that, and this was back in 2005 or maybe 2006, given the content of the movie, it's Jerusalem, the Muslims and the Christians fighting over Jerusalem. I do wonder if next year. If what's going to happen is if we're going to have just the continued onslaught, the continued financial onslaught to rev us up, to infuriate people as much as possible, to get them ready to go fight a major war that's going to be a major third world war that's going to be kicked off in Jerusalem. I mean, the content of the movie is the conquest or the contentious history of Jerusalem, and there's this interesting scene at the end. The historical character, his name is Baelion, may not be pronouncing it right, played by Orlando Bloom. He's scoring off, defending Jerusalem against the Muslim leader Saladin. May not be pronouncing
that
right.
And I said Saladin. That's right.
And at the end, Orlando Bloom, he realizes, okay. We fought a good fight, but they're just going to keep coming. The city's being sieged, and we cannot hold out for forever, so I'm just going to surrender. He does. And he goes out and meets Saladin, and they make the surrender agreement. And Orlando Bloom's about to leave. Saladin's about to leave. Orlando Bloom asks him, what is Jerusalem worth? And Saladin, he says, nothing. And then he walks away, and then he turns back, half turns back, and he says, everything. So the implicit message, which may not be implicit, I may just, hopefully, I guess maybe I am interpreting it correctly, the message seems to be that this issue of Jerusalem is not meant to be anything more than a continual, what would you call it, a continual, I don't know what the word is. I don't have the right word. It's just it's a problem that's not meant to be solved, ever.
Oh, I agree, yeah.
And, well, of course, you and I, we can see these things clearly, but it's easy to see these things once you're far removed from all the lies that are fed to you through the TV, through the radio. And I've lived here in Athens now for 6 years, and the whole time I lived here, I consciously chose not to have a TV, not to have TV service when I moved here. And the friends I've associated with here, none of them had, well, they might have had a TV, but it was for the DVD player to watch something, but they didn't have cable service. That's been a common factor for the people I've been around, I've been friends with here, and that they've all helped me in many ways.
Well, I mean, there's a reason why China wants to have all its citizens have a TV. It's not because of freedom. It's because it's a great tool of propaganda,
yeah,
which people hear. You know, in my little wise guy crack is that the problem with Americans is that they're propagandized into believing they can't be propagandized. And, man, I mean, I just think that's true as anything.
And that might be the height of propaganda. That might be the highest goal of a propagandizer. Is to...
Right, that you take it on and don't even know it. And that certainly is here. We laugh at everyone else because we look at Pravda, we look at TASS, we look at all these other agencies, you know, and state-sponsored news agencies, and we laugh, oh, you guys are getting, well, we are too. It doesn't make a difference whether it's the state, you know, in its state uniform, or whether it's supposedly through commercial entities, which, again, you know, corporate fascism is here and alive. It doesn't make a difference. The point is that we get managed news, and we just can't believe it's happening here. And that's probably going to continue, I'm sad to say, but there's not too many people who want to come out of the cave and look at the sunlight, I'll tell you right now. So that's just the way it is. And, you know, it's like Robinson Jeffers said, you know, let the servile serve a leader, let the dupes be duped. So that's the history of the world in just a few words. All right, listen, what we'll do here is, Ron, we'll stop it right now. And we'll pick it up. This has been a pretty good introductory interview, and there's more to go. And so we're not in a hurry. If you have the time throughout the next couple of months when we can do some shows, we'll do that, just as I've done with so many others, and take it from its inception to wherever you're going with it. But I think it's probably also timely because as you're doing this and as I'm doing things like with Larry and Montgomery and the I-Man and stuff, it's like we're actually doing a contemporaneous. I mean, the gap between it, when it happens and what we're talking about, it's closing. I'm not looking for the world to end, you know, or the way we know it end anytime soon, but, you know, there are a lot of elements involved in this, and I think we're starting to see them come together. And I think that's true with this financial situation, which will have, I think, the first major blow that brings the New World Order one step closer. So, yeah, it gets interesting because we're no longer looking at it that necessarily through a future lens. It's kind of catching up on us. So I want to thank you for coming on and making contact with what you had to say because, obviously, I mean, people will judge you for their own purposes, but... you know, I think you're on the right track without a doubt. And it does. It's funny you should mention it. Where else can you find a convergence of Ackerman and Martin and Montgomery and the I-Man?
Astrology links them together.
Yeah, and I mean, it just confirms the fact that on several levels, this is exactly what's happened. So you've been listening to Ronald Lee Claxton, and we're talking about the shape of things to come in not too distant future. And he'll be back with us again.